the stroke made me aware of all the things I don't want anymore in my life. And I had this idea that thinking of what you don't want, thinking about the negative, is a very, very powerful thing. It can actually motivate you deeply. It can create real change in your life. It can make you think more creatively. I want to talk a little bit about the book I'm working on, The Law of the Sublime, which, if the gods are willing, will be out next fall. And so what I wanted to talk about was a little bit of the origin of the book and what it means. And the reason for that is tomorrow is the anniversary of my stroke. And it's just another day. It's not like that particular day is something strange to me. But the feeling in the air, the feeling of this particular time of the year in mid-August, kind of brings it back to me and some of the sensations and the feelings and the moods that the stroke gave me sort of waft over me and bring me back to that experience. And so where I want to begin is I'm coming back from the hospital. I've been in the hospital for about a week after my stroke, and I'm in the ambulance on my way back home. I have to be taken back in an ambulance because I can't walk. And when I was in the hospital, I was in this like strangely elated mood. I was joking with everyone. I felt different. I felt sort of good in a very strange way. I can't explain it. And so I'm sitting in the back of the ambulance. It's only like a 15-minute ride, and all these thoughts are coming to me, ideas for books. I had this idea for a book about what I call negative thinking. And for a minute in the ambulance, I thought maybe this is my next book. And the idea was the stroke made me aware of all the things I don't want anymore in my life, right? And I had this idea that thinking of what you don't want, thinking about the negative, is a very, very powerful thing. It can actually motivate you deeply. It can create real change in your life. It can make you think more creatively. And so I thought about that. But then what came back to me was this idea that I had had years ago for a book on the sublime, right? And because it was the stroke itself and the experience that had created this idea of not wanting to go back to my old life. And the sublime is kind of an experience like that. Once you experience the sublime, it kind of changes you. And so I'm thinking in the ambulance about the book, and it's like ideas are triggered in my head. And when I come back home and I settle down, I know that if I don't put my mental energy into a book project, I will get very, very depressed. And who knows what would happen in that case, because I have a very active mind. And the stroke kind of ruined the left side of my body and ruined me physically, but it didn't seem to do much to my brain, which seemed to be more active than ever. And I remember one day I'm sitting in my office beginning to work on the Sublime book. And the thing is, back in around 2005 or 2006, I had been planning to write this book on the Sublime. And I got derailed by, I think, the 50 Cent Project or Mastery, one of them. Anyway, I had hired a researcher at that time to help me research what would be the Sublime book back in 06, around then. And I'm in my office now, you know, after my stroke, and I'm going through those notes, and I'm starting to get very emotional. And I actually even started to cry, and I don't cry very much. And the reason was I had been planning, I didn't realize this, but I'd been planning to do all of these things to be able to relate the sublime to you. I was going to have experiences. I was going to go in the Caribbean and kind of do this thing with dolphins. I know how cliched that sounds. I was going to go to Tierra del Fuego, the point between Argentina and Antarctica, because it seemed like a magical spot. I was going to go to other magical parts of the planet. I was going to have encounters with animals, with other things, and I was going to have all of these sublime experiences, and I was going to put them in the book. And I'm sitting there going over the research, and I'm going, I can't even walk up outside my house. I can barely walk from room to room. I can't swim. I can't do anything. And it just made me very, very upset and very emotional. Like, this isn't the life I have now. And so I had to kind of calm myself down, and I continued working on the book because, as I said, if I didn't work on a project, I would get very, very depressed. So I'm still working on it. And then it strikes me that it's actually a strength. It's actually a better thing that this happened to me. The book will be this that much better about, okay? And the reason I say that is, having done a lot of research on the subject, because there are a lot of books written on it, more than you might imagine, and these very theoretical books, very abstract, from like deconstructors and people who write about aesthetics and philosophers, and they kind of were giving me a headache because they were so abstract. I had to think very deeply. It really wasn't connected to anything in my experience, right? It just was like thoughts, like little triggering electronic things going on in your brain, but nothing here in the gut, nothing real. I thought, this is very odd. Sublime is this insane experience that changes you. And these books are so intellectual that they have none of the feeling of the sublime. And so I want to be able to give that feeling to the reader. But most readers can't go to Tierra del Fuego, can't go to the Caribbean, can't go to the Gobi Desert, can't climb mountains, even though physically they could because it's very expensive and, you know, et cetera. So I had this idea that I'm going to make this book different. I'm going to ground it in something very simple and very real, okay? It's something that you can experience every single day of your life. You don't need hallucinogenic drugs, although I have nothing against that. That could be a component in the sublime. But you don't have to take the drugs. You don't have to travel anywhere. You don't have to climb a mountain. Why? Because you are surrounded literally by the sublime all around you. Being alive is sublime. Seeing birds is sublime. Seeing people walking around is sublime. Seeing the sky is sublime. And why am I thinking that? Because I'm sitting there trapped in my office. All I can get the sublime for, it's keeping me alive by having these thoughts that I can't take a hike, but I can go in my mind and I can still experience the insanity, the awe-inspiring insanity of what it means to be alive. And so in writing the book and conceiving it this way, I decided, okay, I'm going to ground every chapter, there are 12 chapters, in a main story that's going to inspire you, that's going to give you a gut feeling of what I'm talking about, okay? Some of the stories are very different from anything I've done before because some of them are pure fiction. I've made them up, just a couple of them. Then I'm going to have the key section, which I'm going to describe the idea. You know, I talk about like the sublime with animals and interspecies sublime, about childhood, about love. So I'm going to, in the key section, I'm going to describe in more detail what I mean. Then I'm going to have smaller stories that are going to give you more detail about it, like I had in Mastery and other books. And at the end, I'm going to have a section called the Sublime Experience, in which I literally give you exercises that you can use in your life to kind of bring this into your daily experience. Because what's the damn point of writing a book about the sublime if it doesn't inspire you to feel it, not to think it? Because the sublime is not really a thought. It's something, and this is what interested me when I first read about it some 29 years ago, was that the sublime is an experience you can't put into words. It kind of eludes language. It's so pre-verbal. It's just a feeling. It's an immense feeling, right? And so you can't really verbalize it. So it's not a thought. It's not an abstract thing. It's an experience. It's a sensation. I'm going to literally train you, teach you how in your daily life, even though you can walk and do things I can't, you can experience the sublime everyday moments of your life, walking to work, at home, talking to your spouse or your partner, being around animals, just looking out at everything. So these exercises that ground you in the reality of the sublime. And as I've explained before, each chapter of the 12 chapters is kind of an aspect of the sublime that you can access. And I've described it before that normally human experience, I compare it to a circle. Our minds are trapped by certain conventions that our society, that our culture as a social animal, patterns that we're supposed to, conventions of things we're supposed to think, how we're supposed to behave. These conventions change. They're not the same conventions that existed in ancient Egypt, but there's always a limiting factor. There's always, this is what is considered normal. This is what's considered what we have, how we have to think. You're not aware of the fact that your culture here in the 21st century America is conditioning you to think a certain way, but it is limiting you. Nowadays, I have a chapter in the book in which I describe living in 18th century London. And the prevailing metaphor at the time was life is like theater, it's drama. We're all actors. We don't have that metaphor anymore. We don't think like that. We think of everything as a computer. The brain is software. We operate by algorithms. The human brain, we don't realize that that's a convention. That's not reality. That's just something we've now come upon. It's a trend in 21st century America. In 22nd century America, there'll be a different prevailing metaphor. But they're limits, they're convention, and they're preventing you from exploring other ways of thinking, other forms of consciousness. Each chapter, there are 12 of them, I compare it to like a clock. Each one points to a different thing lying outside that circle. And so I'm giving you key concrete ways for you to access them. I don't know how the book is going to be received. When it comes out, it'll have been 6 years after I started working on it. And it's kind of difficult, if you can imagine, to work on something for so long and have nobody reading. I've had a couple people reading it, but to have no public reaction. So I'm very curious to see how people respond to it, because it's going to be a very strange book. My wife, she compared it like a drug trip because she's the one who's been kind of working on helping me with it and editing it. So it's like taking a drug trip. You know, she reads it, she goes, whoa. I'm hoping that's going to be your experience, but we'll see. And in a year, I'll know what the answer is. So thank you.